at the time of death, and then sometime later takes in another body, and that's you again, born into a different time and different circumstances. But as I say, it's actually quite a bit more complicated than that, because although it's true that, let's say, talking about the soul now, the soul is actually a very complex, is very complex. It's made up of many pieces of soul stuff. And that soul stuff is, in fact, you know, it's indestructible, and you could say eternal. But the particular configuration that results in the human life that you identify as me, you know, I don't mean as the self, is quite unique. And the precise likes of which has never been seen before. But the pieces, the soul parts, as I say, at death they don't just cease to exist. They're still around. But one of the you know, the end products of after death is that that particular construct gets taken apart. And you know, in traditional societies, this is seen as a magnificent blessing, because when that happens, the last vestiges of the illusion of individuality are gone. And that's, you know, like in the Hindu tradition, that's called Mahasamadhi, the great samadhi. So it's not seen as a bad deal. So the soul parts still exist, and they're still fully aware. But the construct that you could say is you is taken apart. And they pass into what's sometimes called a ancestral pool, or I like to think of it as a spare parts bin. Now, when the time comes for a new life, human life, divine takes those pieces from the spare parts bin and constructs them in a new way. There is some smallish part of it that remains, by and large, quite intact, but the rest of it is quite a different combination. And canon does include soul parts from places that belonged, you could say, to other people. So one never reincarnates as exactly the same person as, or with the same soul as they left with. If that were true, you would look exactly the same, you'd have the same characteristics, the same gender, the same everything. But in fact, that's not the case. So, that's sort of the basics of a more more articulated version of reincarnation is about. It's kind of like in physics, they say that matter can never be created or destroyed. It can change form, you know, it can turn into energy and back into matter and stuff, but the stuff that in that case, the scientists say that the world is made of, canon does change configuration, but it doesn't just disappear or something like that. So in a similar way, you can say the same thing about the soul stuff, that it does, on the one hand, it doesn't just disappear after death. On the other hand, it's not like there are discrete entities that stay that way throughout, you know, throughout the ages, and just find their way into different bodies and different conditions. It's a little bit more complicated. So, in fact, anybody who's living will then have soul parts. As I say, there are some that are under good circumstances quite stable, kind of like a core. But the rest of the configuration can and does change. And and in some circumstances, people can have very convincing memories of past lifetimes. And that can create confusion for people in the Western world because, you know, if you have, if you happen to know, let's say, a dozen people who claim that they were Cleopatra in a previous lifetime, you say, well, obviously, either they're fooling themselves or this whole reincarnation thing is a bunch of hooey or something like that. But actually, that kind of thing can happen because the memory that can come to the surface for some people doesn't necessarily mean that they are exactly the same person, but rather there is some seeping into consciousness of some memory of something that a soul part of theirs participated in. So, also, this is something, for example, that the Tibetan people are very aware of. And, you know, you may have heard that when a great lama, a great teacher, passes on, after a while there's a procedure that they go through to locate the new incarnation so that that person and their teachings and so forth are not lost. And I'm not deeply familiar with it, but I know that one of the things that they do is they take personal effects of the lama who's passed on and show them to different children, and some children, you know, just have memories and so forth and a deep connection knowing about what those are, and they say, okay, that's the one. But very commonly, more commonly than not, there's more than one child who will respond that way. You see, they're not bothered by that because they understand how this works. And it seems like what they try to do is find the one, I don't know, that has the most pieces or is the, due to the circumstances of their birth and so forth, is the most trainable or something like that. But anyway, the point there is that the perspective that I'm talking from right now is something that is widely understood, but not really very well understood in, you know, the modern Western world.
I think Baron mentioned earlier today about that there's a bit of a changeover in the modern world. Could you talk about, was it different in traditional societies? Would you have more sort of parts locally?
Yeah, that's the simplest way to say it. So, traditionally, and by that I mean, you know, if we can say that human beings as full human beings have been around here on the earth for about 180,000 years, apparently. For most of that time, people lived in a way where the you know, the peoples of a certain region. And first of all, it was understood and experienced that those peoples and their sacred stories and all this talk about this, that those peoples were actually brought forth from what we can call the land or the natural world at that place. And of course, when they died, they were returned to that place. And in the meantime, they were part of the people of that place and therefore shared a soul relatedness. Is this making sense?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they were also given the spiritual traditions that would serve them according to their soul construct. So they were born into their, you could say, their soul home. They lived with their soul people. They practiced their soul traditions. They died also in a way where the shamans took care to see to it that when they, in the afterlife, they would return to their ancestral home. And by the natural chemistry of it, they were just reborn again into the same place, the same tradition, the same, and so forth. And that's pretty much the way human beings have lived for most of our history. And one of the consequences of that is those soul pools, ancestral soul pools, stayed very pure. And so that worked out very well. Now, more recently, that's broken down quite a bit. First of all, in recent times, and by that I mean in the last 10 or 15,000 years, more and more there have been circumstances where people have been displaced from their ancestral homes and their ancestral traditions. They die in someplace else. They don't have access to the funerary rites to take them back where they belong afterwards. The soul has a tendency to wander around quite a bit, and oftentimes will end up in a soul pool, an ancestral spare parts bin, if you will, that is exotic to their birth and their nature. And so the soul pools have become quite mixed. And the result of that is you get people being born in conditions where the place of their birth and even their genealogical ancestry is not the whole story of who they are in terms of their soul structure anymore. And one of the ways this shows up is that you get people born, well, I was speaking a little while ago about the Tibetan people, and these days, when they go around looking for the incarnation of a lama or something like that, they sometimes find them in very strange places, like outside of Mexico City. A few years back, an important lama incarnation was identified. But even if it's not a matter of a great spiritual teacher or something like that, people these days, by and large, tend to be very mixed in terms of their soul structure. And sometimes that shows up in the way that you find people, let's say, who are born in this country, of ancestry from some particular place in Europe or Africa or something, and they find their way to a very deep and authentic connection to a spiritual tradition that doesn't have anything to do with where they were born or who their parents were. Now that's something pretty novel, but that happens a lot these days. So I think that's what was being referred to.
Aren't you a living example of that?
Yes, actually, all these people here.
That was going to be my next question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's impossible to happen without a really substantial amount of what we call tonale, or soul. And, that's one of the reasons that almost has never happened in the past. Mm-hmm. But the conditions are different now.
Mm-hmm. What about the aspect of reincarnation, which is that somehow your soul continues to need to work on certain aspects of the self if they're just pieces of tonality put together in one person?
Yeah. So, can you say a little bit more about your question so I make sure I understand it?
I don't know if it's even my belief, but it's just often what I find most fascinating about reincarnation is people say, okay, well, there was something in a past life that you didn't, work on enough, so now you need to really work on it now, and if you don't work on it now, then it'll continue on to the next life, and so how does that work when you have different pieces of tonality from different souls?
Yeah, well, it works pretty good, I guess. If you progress? How does it work? That was supposed to be funny. You can laugh.
He's got more shit to deal with.
Yeah. Well.
Thanks a
lot. Well, there is.
I'd rather just have my own daggers, thank you.
No carrying.
Yeah, but the question there is, who is this me that you're talking about?
Well, I know that's the question because I've not really heard the different pieces like you're talking about. So, right, who is the me if it's not just a single me?
Well, it's a composite. Okay. But I don't know if this will satisfactorily answer your question, but I'll say it anyway. And that is, there's a process after death. In the Christian tradition, they call it purgatory. The Buddhists call it the bardo state. I guess there's many other names for it. But there's a process after death where the spirit of the departed gets an opportunity to clean up a lot of the unfinished messes that they've made. It's it's a very challenging place for the soul to be, but the benefit of it is that it does clean things up substantially. It doesn't necessarily do the job perfectly. And so that means there's something remaining to be worked through. And the question of, who gets to work on it next time, it's a good question. I don't know the answer to it. But there is a lot of the unfinished business that is cleaned up or purified in the purgatory state. But in any case, for the most part, at least my view of it is, for the most part, for practical purposes, it doesn't really make that much difference. What I mean is, you got to work with what you got to work with.
Yeah.
And whether it came from, sometime in ancient Siberia or something like that or whatever, here it is. It's your job to clean it up the best you can. And this lifetime is the place to do that.
I have a question about reincarnation to tag on to that one.
Okay.
We were talking about the soul being reincarnated because it's leaving this pool of pure consciousness, God state, whatever it is, and being reborn rather than staying in that place of bliss or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And there's a certain theory bouncing around that the reason that the soul desires to come back and be reborn is that it's addicted to the sense pleasures of human incarnation. Mm-hmm. That there is some draw to the sense, the five senses of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any... Can you speak about that at all?
Well, first of all, from the perspective that I'm talking about, it gets very tricky to talk about like the desires of the soul, or the soul agreeing to be born in a certain family and certain time and all like that. The tricky thing there is, like I said to your question, who are you talking about? Who is holding these desires or making these agreements? If it's not, what you think of as you.
Well, it would be that part of me that's my soul consciousness, what the Hindus call the observer, what Plato described in his myth of Ur of the choosing of the lots of the lives when you're in the afterlife,
mm-hmm.
and picking the life that's best going to serve your need for your growth.
That's a way of relating to it. It's not exactly the way I relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
because again, it assumes this individual identity as something that persists after death and on and so forth, which from my experience isn't exactly the way it works. So the way I look at it is more like just seems to be the setup. And so, how do you work with it or relate to it? Like, why is it set up that way? Well, interesting question, but what it comes down to, like I say, is like working with it, what you've got to work with. It's a way to think about it. It's a way to relate to it. So I guess it's okay. From my experience, I don't quite see it that way.